Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 Podcast, Canada's number one optometry podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here to learn and to grow. Always appreciate everybody taking their time. I have two amazing guests here. This is going to be one of those episodes that I think is really going to change the way that we see the future of eye care and hopefully down the road the way we practice as well. We are going to be talking about AI and the medical applications of AI right now in eye care. Right now, that's a happening, not about to happen, but actually happening right now. And we are going to be talking to two members of the team from the company Diagnose. Diagnose is developing technology that uses AI and machine learning to extract information from the retina specifically to elevate eye care for ECPs. And I have Mr. Yves-Stéphane Couture, who has been working in tech for almost 25 years. And he started in telecom, moved over to software, and now working with AI at Diagnose. He's the VP of sales there. I also have Dr. Hadi Shakur, who is the chief medical officer. He's a medical doctor. He has a master's in biomedical engineering from the University of Montreal. He also has a PhD in biomedical engineering, or what he says, preventative medicine. And right now is working on creating predictive medical models, which I love that term, predictive medicine, with Diagnose. Two people I think it's going to be really exciting to talk about. The company Diagnose, the technology there, and applications of AI kind of at large within eye care. So thank you so much for joining me, both of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with a little bit of an introduction, if you don't mind, each of you take a turn, tell me a little bit about yourself, and then let's dive into Diagnose.
My name is Hadi Shakur. I'm medical, the chief medical officer of Diagnose. Also, I am a medical doctor, MD, with a specialization in ophthalmology. Also, I am also certified in electrophysiology, visual electrophysiology. It's all about the function of the retina. Also, I did a master's in biomedical engineering and also a PhD of preventive medicine, if you can say that, by using the relation or correlation between the microcirculation and the microcirculation. And I like Diagnose in 2017 as the chief medical officer. And I like this and because they are using this technology. I think this is the way of the future. They take this predictive medicine. And it's all about, for me, the difference between live longer and live healthy.
I like that, yeah. That's a very big difference. Very big difference. We've seen people who live longer, but those last 5 or 10 years can be not great years, right? So living healthier is a much better option, if I could say so.
I like this because now we have a really great tool to predict, or the predictive medicine, and we can be healthy by using this.
It's great. Properly. Wonderful. Yves-Stéphane.
Good afternoon, Yves-Stéphane Couture. I'm a VP of sales here at Diagnose. I've been in technology since a long time, 25 years, working in telecom first, selling to large telcos. In Canada, we have the TELUS. I sold to Cogeco, all those big accounts, deploying fiber optics. Yeah, I was there when we deployed internet into the home. I did that. the smartphone and everything. So I saw all those changes. So we brought this technology into those companies to bring new services to the end users. And I think when I joined Diagnose like in 2017 too, says how can we get this technology, this AI, this machine learning, this computer working for us, and make them really work for us to enhance the quality of life of the patient, help them to, when they're sick, to do an early detection, as well as help the doctor to see more patients, or help the optometrist to have more precise information so they can make a better decision. So it's all about that. It's creating value for everybody and making sure we're all better because we're using technology.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do.
Great. So Diagnose, I don't know if this is a company and a technology that too many people have heard of yet, but I'm sure it's something that's going to become something more that we're more familiar with over the coming years. Why don't we talk about how it started? Let's start a little bit of the origins of it, and then what is it? Like, what does it actually do?
Well, I can can give you a brief summary of that. I wasn't there. Diagnose started doing all kind of innovation and AI before it was AI. They did a few applications. One, which worked very well, into the mining industry. And what they did is they looked at the geophysics and they collect all the data and did a lot of the data mining and doing predictive model. If you have this types of mineral, this types of physics, then you can predict you have a mine. So when you go back and you look back and you do those models over and over again, and you be more precise and help the mining industry to find minerals. This they were very successful. They spun off this company, and now it's living on itself by itself. They had a couple other technologies that they tried. It was not as successful, and it's okay. The point is trying, and after that you learn and you get better. And after that, I think in 2010, they moved into healthcare, starting to have a vision of what they want to do in healthcare. And they've been more since then. So then they've been working to get some technology in there. First, they were detecting the presence of bright and dark lesion into the retina, and after that they moved forward. And I joined in 2017, and this is where we took another avenue using deep learning as well. Before they were using machine learning, and after that we moved deep learning, trying to predict more than just the presence of lesion or not, but trying to understand what is it. And which level of severity is the standard?
Could you actually, thank you for the backstory there. What you said right at the end, I think, is actually maybe an important distinction to make for kind of us who are less knowledgeable on the AI technology type of conversation. Machine learning versus deep learning versus AI. Is there like a very quick distinction that you can make for us so we understand the difference?
Sure. Machine learning is you analyze an image and you analyze the features of this image, and you're trying to see what it's in the image. And deep learning is a little bit more complex than that. You have a large data. You, as an example, diabetic retinopathy is as all the users knows, there's four levels of diabetic retinopathy. You have R1, R2, R3, R4. So it's mild, moderate, severe, and proliferative. So deep learning, what it does, you let the machine decide, you put the images, you put the level of severity, and you train the algorithm to predict at which level of severity the image is in terms of diabetic retinopathy, and you have multiple layers to do that. So you let the machine decide which characteristic in the image is going to be relevant for the algorithm to decide if it's an R1, R2, R3, or R4. And you go and you teach them one time, two times, two, three times, and you have multiple layers on that. So you take one image and it goes through a sieve, it goes down, and whoops, you make a prediction of what it is, which level of diabetic retinopathy it is, or other level of severity of illnesses. So that's in a high level, and then a very high level, that's what it is. So you predict that. So machine learning would say, like, is what is the contour? What is the color? What is it like sharp? Is it round? So that's a feature base. And the other one would be like predicting by level of severity.
Sure. that kind of makes sense in the process of, you know, when I'm looking at a patient's eye, you know, when I'm looking at it and I'm making my notes, usually I will describe what I'm seeing, like you said, the size, the location, the color. And then later I have to make a diagnosis. So then I'm giving my assessment plan. Here's a diagnosis based on the feature of those things that I saw. So machine learning is more like seeing it, describing what it looks like. And then deep learning is more like giving a definition to it and a diagnosis to it.
Yeah, it's a cognitive process to do that.
Then cognitive process.
Cognitive process using computer to put that into a
Just I want to add something also. Because I remember when I started with the diagnosis, we started with machine learning, and all these engineers working with diagnosis, they used to come to my office, and I just show them where is the disease, the different lesion in the retina, and like unsettling this lesion and anomaly, different anomaly. But with deep learning is another story, because deep learning, one of the challenge of the deep learning, it's need data and annotated data. This is what the most challenging thing in the deep learning. But you cannot compare, because I remember when you, the analysis of one image, retina, by using machine learning, like took more than sometimes 60 seconds, more than a minute, depending on the internet. But by using deep learning, it's 2-3 seconds. And the deep learning, the algorithm, the comparison between one image to the other, it's come like 27,000 futures between two images.
Wow.
In 2-3 seconds. But for that, he need only annotated data. But this is the challenge. Challenge is that the training, data training, and validation. It is expensive and inclusive. Inclusive because depend each disease has its own data.
Right.
But this is a future.
Yeah, so there's a lot to it, obviously, like you're saying, Yves Stefan, you're giving very high level, Dr. Shakur giving a little bit more in depth about what actually is a difference there and why deep learning is so much more detailed. 27,000 different features, you said, in just a matter of a couple of seconds. That's incredible.
Absolutely.
So tell us, what does Diagnose actually do? What does it look like? A patient puts their head in it, it takes a picture of the retina and then does a bunch of analysis. Is that ultimately what it, on the basis, what it does?
What we do is we use the fundus pictures and the OCT from various manufacturers in a marketplace.
Okay.
So we analyze the fundus pictures, we analyze the OCT, we detect, and after that we will detect by illnesses, and after that we'll grade them by level of severity and provide the response back to the healthcare professional so they can make a decision afterwards.
So the images are gathered by existing technology, whatever retinal scan or OCT that the clinic may already have. You integrate your technology with that.
Yeah, we take these images, we send it to our data center, we analyze it into our server, and we send back the response using the internet in a secure manner.
And this is happening live time. So as I'm seeing a patient, their pictures were taken in the pre-testing room before the patient sat in front of me. Those pictures have already been sent and they've come to my computer in the exam room with the analysis.
With the response, exactly. So you can go and look at a response, make your own validation. And on top of it, you have the patients in front of you. You know his history, you know which medication the patient is taking. He can tell you a lot more. You've been talking to the patient, you may be first, second, or third visit. So using all this information, you make your own diagnostic. So it's an AI assisted, right? It's a helping tool to help you.
So tell me about, what one thing we're going to be talking about, maybe now is the right time. You know, Diagnose has a partnership or a relationship with Iris. Iris, the group of optometry practices across Canada, the Iris group. And I'd like to learn a bit more about, because that was a big part of your, over the last few years, gathering a lot of data, right? And having that normative database now to use to create that analysis for each of these images. Let's talk a little bit about that. When did that partnership begin and what's happened more recently to kind of cap that off?
Yeah, just to give you a little bit more background than that, Diagnose started a lot of research for diabetic retinopathy. That was our main bread and butter. Pharmaceutical company hired us to go around the globe to do a screening clinic in the States, in Canada, in Europe, Middle East, in India. So we acquired this very large database of images, about 400,000 patients, images from 400,000 patients.
100,000, is that what you said?
400.
400,000 patients.
Yeah. So we have this huge database. Yeah. So we did a lot of that for pharmaceutical companies. They asked to do that in the past. When I joined, we started to work with the University of Montreal Teaching Hospital, the SHIM. This is where we started. We installed our application at the endocrinology department so we can do a test for diabetic retinopathy. People with diabetes, they go see the endocrinologist, and the endocrinologist just wanted to know what is the health of the retina of my patient for diabetic retinopathy. So we did this test. We worked with the ophthalmology department there, and our help was our hope was to triage the patient, the severe case, put it more priority so they can be seen by an ophthalmologist. And for people with lower case of, not less severe case of diabetic retinopathy, at least the doctor can know about it, adjust the medication, and give some feedback to the patient. So that was all well and doing great there, working well. And I decided to try to go back outside and work with the optometrist. When I met with Iris, just to start Iris, he says, this is great. Diabetic retinopathy is very interesting, but this is, we have like a broad population. We don't have only, we don't invest into a technology just for diabetes, about 10% of our population or 7 or 8%, correct. That's really important. It was not enough. And this is when I'm working with Dr. Shekhar. He's been working for a long time into understanding the microcirculation and trying to detect cardiovascular diseases, looking at the microcirculation. And that caught the attention of Iris. And this is what, okay, now we're talking about something that can be more interesting because I can screen my patient for illnesses related to diabetic retinopathy and maybe with some other diseases like hypertensive retinopathy. And that really says, okay, so now I can propose a service to a broader population, a broader age group than just diabetes.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So one of the thoughts that was coming through my mind was, okay, well, diabetic retinopathy, analyzing that is fine, but how much does it really change my practice? But if you're really looking at the microcirculation, looking for multiple different diseases, now we're talking that actually can change how I'm treating this patient in front of me significantly. Also, going back to, you know, the fact that you have deployed this technology across the world in all these different countries and populations gives you a very broad database with a lot of different patient data from, you know, globally from different backgrounds. That's huge, because otherwise we know some of the older normative databases for OCTs and things were very narrow, right? It was like a very narrow. So when you have somebody who's a South Asian patient coming in, all of a sudden the database is calling, saying they have glaucoma because it's based on, you know, these other data points that are not really relevant to that background. So really cool that you have that. And 400,000 patients, you tell me, that sounds like a lot of people.
That's a lot.
And from a different population.
Exactly.
Population. It's very important.
That's probably more, even more valuable. Yeah. Sorry. So I totally skipped. I apologize. I skipped over all of that very important information of getting this global population, this big database, all these data points, the fact that you've had it deployed in a highly well-renowned hospital at University of Montreal. You've had all of that. And now you have a partnership with Iris.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. So as I was saying, when we started talking to with Iris, this is okay, now that we can bring this new application and get all the expertise that Dr. Shekhar had with hypertensive retinopathy, we put a plan together, a proposal to get a screening database, get a data set built based on the specificity of the Canadian population, because we're very focused on being around. So why, and I proposed to them, why don't we do a study, a data set on the Canadian population and use, as well as the annotation, the validation, and all the data point from local clinician optometrists, so we can understand what's important for them. We can learn from them looking at those pictures, and we can retrain the algorithm that we have using their annotations. We can be more specific to the challenge that presents itself in Canada, into their healthcare mode. And this is what we did. We built that together. We went to get some help from the government, and we were able to deploy that, adapt the platform to the setting of an optometry clinic, which is different than the setting of a doctor. They look at different things. So we had some software, some adjustment in our software and our application to meet that. And we deployed it into first 10 clinic, and after that 13. And we were able to gather information from 14,000 patients and into multiple diseases, diabetic retinopathy, AMD, as well as hypertensive retinopathy.
Yeah, so 14,000 patients. And now you have that, the annotations from those doctors to really, again, give the deep learning that information to understand those conditions and those images. Well, Dr. Shekhar, anything to add to that?
I think that would be interesting for Dr. Shakar to talk more about the hypertensive retinopathy, because that was a big difference, and I'll let you talk about that.
Yep. Are we back? Dr. Shakar, you got us there?
You got it.
We start the starting point also when you talk about starting with the diabetic retinopathy. You know, the sugar, the damage of the sugar is more on the microcirculation, but the insulin resistance damaging more the microcirculation.
I see.
Micro and macro.
That's right.
And that's why when a patient with a diabetic condition starts to have a diabetic retinopathy, because the damage of sugar is directly on the microcirculation. But if the patient has insulin resistance, even it's one step before diabetes condition, starts to have this damage on the microcirculation because of the inflammation, because insulin resistance provokes inflammation. So that's why the point of the hypertensive retinopathy, because it's all connected. And all these patients with this condition, it's a chronic disease. And sometimes, and most of the time, people don't know they have high blood pressure because are not under the radar of the doctor, Medicare. And that the damage is there, it's on the microcirculation, because the high blood pressure damaging first also as the sugar, the microcirculation.
Okay.
And by using this type of technology and AI, that help us really to manage and also to prevent these complication from this disease.
So the sugar and the high blood pressure both have an effect on microcirculation, and this technology with Diagnose is going to help pick up those changes in the microcirculation before there's macro changes. Is that correct?
Earlier, at the early stage, because the early stage of this damage is on arteries and veins, also retinal arteries and veins, by diminution, which is called the arteriovenous ratio, which is a ratio between arteries and veins, and this is start to be lower. And also, we have a presence of tortuosity, which is a shape of the pressure.
Right.
And also, we have a presence of another anomalies, which is called the cotton spot, the flame hemorrhage, and so and so. But all this future is now under the radar of the artificial intelligence. And this is wonderful. And it's an objective user, not like before. Because before, even the ophthalmologist see like this, but still it's subjective. You know, when you see from your retinograph or from by using the human eye, it's not like artificial intelligence, but give you the right view.
We assess those features, right, of the retinal vasculature. We look at the tortuosity. We look at the ratio, but we have biases. And we're estimating, right? Okay, looks about roughly about this. Looks like it maybe changed a little bit like this. But when you're using a machine, you're using technology, it's going to be much more accurate, and there's no bias, or at least there shouldn't be. But that's maybe something we could talk about a little more in a minute. So sounds like this is something that can be, you know, extremely valuable. What's the expectation now moving forward? So this is going to be, it was for a few years here used within a set group of clinics within IRIS. And now that run is done, that those tests are done, and it's, I assume, concluded that it works well.
Yeah.
What's happening next?
Well, it's done. It's done collecting data, and that's one thing we did. We collect the data. We retrained the algorithm 3 times. We shared those data with IRIS, with the clinical committee as well. So we made sure that what we're doing is monitored and is understood, and we all agreed on that. There's one aspect we haven't talked is we made sure that every patient that came into the study had a consent form and consent to use the data. I think that's one thing that's very important into AI is you need to be ethical. You need to make sure that people are well informed of what they do. I think we're going to use their data, and we're only going to use that to retrain. and as well as the when we retrain, that we share the information and it's reviewed by the a group that's independent from us. And that and we went there. We've done that, sorry, with Iris. Now we deployed it. So we're in a phase where we're deploying them, this technology into their clinics. We have about 20 done in Quebec. We're doing more, and we're going to start deploying that in Ontario as well.
That's great. So that the ethical side of the conversation, something I wanted to talk a little bit more about. I know that's something that's important for you as well. What other types of ethical considerations do you have to, imagine there's numerous, do you have to keep in mind when deploying something like this?
For us, because we are using a picture of the retina, by using a retinograph or a CT, we need the approval and the consent informed from the patient. This is very important. But we are not using blood, we are not using special data from the patient, and it's more simple. If the patient gives us the consent and the consent and sign the consent form, it will be much easier. For another, if you are using artificial intelligence in another field, medical field, but in another field, another specialty, it could be another story.
I see. Okay.
This is one thing. Another thing that we did is we made sure that all the age were represented into our data set with Iris, all the region as well. So we didn't want to have like a clientele that it was more like affluent. Downtown Montreal only, so we went to the region as well, and we made sure to work very closely with the eye care special professional, the optometrist, to explain the process, explain what we were looking, how the algorithms were working, how we were using we spent a lot of time updating on how we do the classification, make sure we're all working from the same level and field. And as well as look at the data, the result, make sure that they agree with it, make sure that the way what was presented on the platform was making sense for them, using the right word and everything. So it's an old process that we spent a lot of time sort of with them to make sure it's done to the highest level.
Got it. You know, with like generative AI especially, there's a lot of talk about bias. You know, the data output is very much dependent on the input of data, right? So is that something that's a concern here as well? I mean, and obviously you've gone through this, you've collected lots of patient data, you've had doctors put their annotations, but is there any concern that though maybe the inputs from the doctors were, I won't say incorrect, but there's some sort of bias maybe integrated that might affect the output?
Yes, because data training and validation is very important in AI. And when you are using deep learning, as well as your data, it's well validated, as well as your algorithm work better. But if the data is not well validated, for sure, we will have a lot of mistakes.
But you've spent a lot of time making sure it's validated.
Yes, and that's why we are doing a lot of tests also to make sure everything is the right thing.
Got it.
And our solution is a supervised training. So we don't just upload the data, put it there, retrain, and that's it. It's done. It's everything has been looked at. You know, like it's clean, not cleaned up, but rearranged, making sure everything is okay. We have some doubts, we put it aside, we go verify why we have doubts, we decide if we put it in or not, and after that we supervise the training. So it's an iterative process, many, many steps. And we do one time, two times, so repeat, it's very repetitive. But this is how you get a very high quality, high performance solution.
Got it. Makes sense. So maybe the elephant in the room in all of this conversation is, you know, anytime AI is brought up now, is this going to take my job? Right? Is this going to somehow exclude, not today, but in the foreseeable future, exclude the optometrist from this entire equation? And perhaps just you stick your head in a scanner and, you know, green is good, red is bad, see you later.
No.
Short answer, no.
Maybe I can say on the very opposite. I think it brings back an optometrist as a healthcare professional, right? The machine looks at the pictures and it draws some classifications and detection. There's no, the machine doesn't explain that to the patient, doesn't understand the history of the patient so they can put that into context. It doesn't give advice, and it's not a, it's not there to reassure the patient on what's going on and give them the best direction and advice and recommendation on what to do. And looking at the pictures, you can see a lot of stuff. Sometimes you think it's one illness, but you need someone else to make sure that what the machine thinks it's one thing, it's really that, or it can be something else. And only a healthcare professional can decide that. No, I think it's going to bring the optometrist more at the forefront of the first line of service for patients with eye diseases. On the opposite, I think it's going to bring more work for the optometrist because they're going to be providing more healthcare services. And let the machine do the screening, the looking, the detection, and all this very hard work, repetitive work. But the person-to-person is done by healthcare specialists. And this is very, very important because you need to put it back to the patient, and the healthcare specialists are at the center of this. It's, you don't do machine just to have machine work with this other machine, right? We do that for the human. But that's my take, and I will let Dr. Sarkar talk more about the medical point of view.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you because I think that put the optometrist in the front line of primary care by using artificial intelligence. Like, let's just take this example of high blood pressure. And this is another tool for them to manage and to monitor the people with high blood pressure, blood pressure condition. That means if the high blood pressure damage the microcirculation, we can see it easily by using artificial intelligence. And from my point or from my opinion, artificial intelligence is another tool to help us and to manage better, to screen better, to do better triage. And this is, I think, a great tool.
Yeah, definitely a great tool. There's no doubt. Imagine it's going to be very helpful for practitioners who embrace it and apply it. But I think, you know, ultimately kind of at least trying to quell some of those fears that some may have about technology overtaking our job, our profession. You know, the question I wanted to ask you is, you know, should it be concern or excitement, fear or excitement about this technology?
For me, I'm excited because for me, you know, I am MD, but I was always attracted by preventive medicine. But in our daily life and daily work, it's very, very difficult to have a preventive medicine. But by using artificial, that's been facilitated for us. And I think artificial intelligence is quasi to reshape preventive medicine and the medical practice. If you can say something else, for me, this, it's not taking our job, but we will do a better job by using this. It's happened also when with this, 20 years ago, the arrival of internet, network, and the people were talking, we will have less jobs, but we have more jobs. Mm-hmm. And also, I think the same with the artificial intelligence. Another revolution that you need.
I agree with you, Adi. I think the optometrists should be very excited and they should be critic about it. They should have like a critical eyes and double check. But at the same time, they should embrace it because and make the technology work for them and for their patient. Mm-hmm. Let the technology work, the hard work, the tedious work, the repetitive task. AI can do it probably better than they can. But let's go back and spending more time with our patient, explaining what they have, give them advice, and be into the caring part of the relations, the healthcare relationship. I think this is where humans are. This is where we bring value. And we should let the machine do the work. the machine does better and focus on care and the expertise and understanding. I think you should be very excited. This is, we live in a very exciting time right now. All this knowledge is available at the fingertips. Yeah. That's so exciting about it.
Yeah, certainly very exciting. Very exciting, I think, for us as eye care providers, you know, it's important for us to not be complacent and not sit back and to actually actively engage and embrace the technology so we can bring it in and can improve the way we take care of our patients and also not fall behind. I don't think, you know, the saying these days seems to be, it's not AI. AI is not going to take our job, but someone who uses AI is going to take your job. So if you don't embrace it, you know, we'll tend to fall behind. So, well, I look forward to seeing this technology coming out more. So thank you guys. I appreciate that. Any final words before we wrap up?
Yeah, if I have something to say, for me, the future is bright. By using, as I said before, and in the first of when I start to talk, I talk about this predictive medicine, and I'm very excited by using artificial intelligence in this field. We can now not only live longer, but
by using it. Not only longer, but healthier. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, and I should say, well, also before we wrap up, where can people learn more? What's a place that someone could go to learn more about Diagnose and what's happening there?
Well, for sure, you can go on our website, diagnose.com, www.diagnose.com.
And that's Diagnos.
Exactly.
No E on the end of that. Got it.
No.
Got it.
And hopefully we can do more podcasts so we can bring more.
Yeah. I love this. This is really great. It's something that I'm very excited about. And I know many of my colleagues are eager to learn more about what's out there. And it's nice to be able to talk about something that's happened, like actually out there implemented in practices right now, versus like, oh, this is an exciting thing coming down the road. There's actually technology being deployed that we can learn about and hopefully integrate into our practices in the near future. So thank you very much, both of you, for taking the time to join me. I appreciate it very much. And thank you, everybody who's watching and listening to the 2020 podcast, Canada's #1 optometry podcast. I will see you guys in the next episode. Take care.
Thank you.